It's Tuesday, the 8th of July, and you're listening to the Wall Street Journal here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader and Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you these headlines from the Wall Street Journal. Wall Street feels new tariff tension. Trump reignites trade war threat but sets delay. And Elon Musk is running out of road in China. Starting with our first headline, Wall Street feels new tariff tension. S&P 500 retreats from record level while dollar, bond yields, oil prices rise. This is by Matt Wirtz and Angus Berwick. Stocks slipped and the dollar strengthened on Monday after President Trump moved trade tensions back to the forefront on Wall Street. The S&P 500 fell nearly 1% to 62.29.98, still close to the all-time high the index hit last week. The NASDAQ Composite Index and Dow Jones Industrial Average also gave up about 1%. The Wall Street Journal Dollar Index, which tracks the U.S. currency against 16 peers, was up 0.6% and was up 3 of the past 4 trading days. Trump, a Republican, took to his Truth Social platform Monday afternoon to announce the U.S. would impose 25% tariffs on goods from Japan and South Korea. He later revealed that other nations, including Laos and Malaysia, would face higher levies. With each post, the major stock indexes fell further. Oil prices and bond yields rose, reflecting concerns that heavier tariffs would lead to higher inflation. Before extending their deadlines to August the 1st, the U.S. was set to reimpose reciprocal tariffs on Wednesday for dozens of countries. And even after he singled out Japan and South Korea for higher levies, Trump said their tariff rates would move lower or higher depending on how those countries adjusted their trade practices with the U.S. The announcement seemed to be changing every 30 minutes, said John Belton, portfolio manager for growth equities at Gabelli Funds. This is more Trump-style negotiations, and the market has grown tired of it the longer it drags on. The September contract for Brent crude oil rose 1.9%, and the 10-year Treasury yield climbed 0.05% to 4.394%. Shares of trade-sensitive companies such as Lululemon, Estee Lauder, First Solar, and Deere declined. Trump also threatened an additional levy on countries aligning themselves with the BRICS group of emerging economies, which includes China and India. Any country aligning themselves with the anti-American policies of BRICS will be charged an additional 10% tariff. There'll be no exceptions to this policy, Trump said. His post came as leaders of the BRICS nations met in Rio de Janeiro. Over the weekend, the group released a statement voicing serious concerns about the rise of unilateral tariff and non-tariff measures. Share prices remained high on an historical basis, and investors, particularly individual investors, are looking past Trump's unpredictability to a time when trade deals are completed, said Sylvia Jablonski, chief investment officer at Defiance ETFs. There is a pro-market sentiment for this president, and this idea of retail buying the dip remains consistent. Talks between the U.S. and many key trade partners remain in flux. The European Union is aiming for an agreement in principle by Wednesday when Trump had threatened to raise tariffs for EU imports to 50%. Trump's social media activity also weighed on Tesla stock after the president ridiculed Elon Musk's plan to form a new political party in opposition to ballooning fiscal deficits under the newly passed spending bill. Tesla shares declined 6.8%, their worst one-day drop since June the 5th, and are down 27% this year. Bitcoin traded around $108,000, not far off record highs. The CBOE Volatility Index, Wall Street's fear gauge, rose about 9%, but remained far off the Liberation Day highs hit in April. And that's Wall Street feels new tariff tension. Our next article by Gavin Bade and Brian Schwartz, Trump reignites trade war threat but sets delay. President rolls out new deadline of August the 1st for deals, tweaks, tariff rises. Washington. President Trump reignited his global trade war Monday, renewing his threat to hit partners with punishing tariffs, even as he announced a three-week extension to negotiate deals. Trump signed an executive order extending the date when his so-called reciprocal tariffs would take effect, with a pause previously scheduled to expire at 12:01 a.m. Wednesday. Additionally, Trump sent letters to a handful of nations outlining tariff rates they would pay if they didn't strike trade deals with the U.S. by August the 1st. If you want to play ball, you have to. This is what you have to pay, Trump said during a Monday night meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. As far as I'm concerned, we're done. We're sending out letters to various countries telling them how much tariffs they have to pay. The administration is close to reaching a deal with India, Trump added. Other officials have said more deals could be announced in the coming days. The administration, the president and his trade team, want to cut the best deals for the American people and the American worker, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said, adding that the delay in the deadline is in the best interest of the country. Trump, on his Truth Social platform, posted letters to the leaders of Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, and others by Monday afternoon, informing them of the August 1st date. In all, Trump sent letters to 14 nations. Earlier, Leavitt suggested more than a dozen nations would get letters, but didn't specify how the countries were chosen. More than 80 countries were subject to the tariffs that were first announced April 2nd on what Trump called Liberation Day. Please understand that these tariffs are necessary to correct the many years of Japan's tariff and non-tariff policies and trade barriers causing these unsustainable trade deficits against the United States, Trump wrote in his letter addressed to Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba of Japan. This deficit is a major threat to our economy and indeed our national security. Letters to other nations were nearly identical, though the rate varied from 25% to 40% depending on the country. The rates were generally closely tied to the original reciprocal rates set in April, though some were slightly different. Japan's new 25% rate is 1 percentage point higher than the 24% rate set in April. Later, Monday, Trump posted letters he would send to the leaders of Tunisia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Cambodia, Thailand, and Serbia, notifying them of tariff rates that they will have to pay on August 1st if they don't make a deal. In the letters, Trump says he will set Tunisia's tariff at 25%, Bosnia and Herzegovina's at 30%, Indonesia's at 32%, Bangladesh and Serbia's at 35%, and Cambodia and Thailand's at 36%. The emphasis on trade follows big wins for Trump, a Republican, in the past 2 weeks, including signing his tax and domestic policy mega bill and helping broker a ceasefire between Israel and Iran. We're going to have several announcements in the next 48 hours, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said on CNBC. Wilbur Ross, who served as Secretary of Commerce in Trump's first term, said the president was moving the goalposts for imposing tariffs while also trying to up the ante by issuing statements reminding world leaders of his pending levies. Effectively, what he has done is said this is what the tariffs will be if other countries don't do something different, Ross said, adding that the original July 9th date was very, very hard to achieve. Interests that represent U.S. trade-reliant businesses have welcomed the Trump administration's stated desire to lower other nations' trade barriers, but decried his continued use of high tariffs as leverage. The president's strategy uncertainty is producing some short-term results, but continuing to threaten exorbitant tariff rates is just paralyzing for business decision-making and erodes trust with our allies and major trading partners, said Jake Colvin, the president of the National Foreign Trade Council, which represents large U.S. firms. Myanmar's rate would be 40% on August 1st, down from 44%, while Laos's would fall from 40% to 40% from 48%. Kazakhstan's rate would fall from 27% to 25%. Malaysia's new rate would rise to 25% from the 24% announced on April 2nd, just like Japan's, while South Africa's rate would stay at 30%, as would South Korea's at 25%. The administration didn't explain why some rates changed. The reciprocal tariffs wouldn't be applied to products that are covered under Trump's separate national security tariffs, a White House official said. So far, the president has applied 50% national security tariffs on steel and aluminum and 25% on automobiles. Similar tariffs for semiconductors, lumber, critical minerals, and copper are being studied by the Commerce Department. U.S. officials have promised that they would strike pacts with other nations to lower tariffs in exchange for more market access and fewer regulations on U.S. firms abroad. So far, the administration has struck a narrow pact with the UK, arrived at a tenuous tariff truce with China, and announced a deal with Vietnam, though neither nation has provided evidence that an agreement has been signed. Nets Trump reignites trade war threat, but sets delay. Our next headline, Elon Musk is running out of road in China. As Tesla falls behind the local competitors it helped create, the billionaire's rupture with Trump is limiting his sway there. This is by Raphael Huang, Lingling Wei, and Yoko Kubota. As Elon Musk confronts deepening business and political challenges in the U.S., he's also facing trouble with his other most important market, China. For a while, Tesla was the hottest car on Chinese roads, and Musk was the toast of Beijing. Government officials showered the company with incentives, part of a concerted strategy to turbocharge the Chinese EV industry by injecting Tesla know-how into the country and spurring competition. Tesla sales took off. But the risk was always that Tesla would start falling behind the rivals it helped create. Now, that's exactly what's happening. Tesla's market share has shriveled as other Chinese automakers became more popular. Meanwhile, Musk's reputation as a partner for Beijing and Washington took a beating as his relationship with Donald Trump soured. Chinese consumers say Teslas increasingly feel tired and out of touch with local tastes. Top China-designed EVs nowadays come with features that aren't normally found in Teslas, such as multiple big screens to watch films and play games, refrigerators to keep drinks cold, and in-car cameras for selfies. BYD, which makes both EVs and batteries, and battery giant Contemporary Amperex Technology, or CATL, recently said they had each developed new technologies that allow users to charge cars in just 5 minutes. Tesla's China staff have voiced concerns to headquarters about the company's aging products, but their warnings often drew sluggish responses. China-based employees said, "The frustrations have built as Chinese salespeople feel more pressure to hit targets without the sexiest cars to sell." EV pioneer. Many Chinese consumers still appreciate Tesla's brand image as an EV pioneer, and the company retains support in Beijing. Chinese leaders see Tesla as a poster child of successful foreign investment and a useful ally in helping China build a green economy centered on renewable energy, EVs, and batteries. As trade tensions with the U.S. heated up this year, Chinese Premier Li Qiang made clear that Tesla's local operation wasn't to be targeted by any retaliatory measures, people familiar with the matter said. But Beijing hasn't given Tesla full regulatory approval for its so-called full self-driving, or supervised, assisted driving software, a technology central to Tesla's ambitions to dominate transportation in the future, and which Chinese companies are also racing to master. At the same time, the public breakup between Musk and Trump is limiting Musk's value to Beijing. In January, Chinese Vice President Hang Zheng met Musk in Washington and told Musk that Beijing hoped he could play a constructive role in U.S.-China relations, a person familiar with the exchange said. Musk wasn't receptive to China's overtures, however, people who consult with Chinese officials said. And because of the Musk-Trump feud, Beijing no longer views the Tesla chief executive as a geopolitical asset and will shy away from publicly courting him, the people said. For Musk, who's pledged to refocus on Tesla now that he is distancing himself from Washington, success in China is vital. It is Tesla's second largest market by revenue after the U.S. and the carmaker's biggest production and export hub, making up around half of its global vehicle shipments and supplying components for its worldwide manufacturing. If anything, China's importance to Tesla is growing after its sales declined in the U.S. and Europe due to his early association with Trump. China is also a testing ground for technologies that Musk prioritizes, such as FSD and driverless taxis. Tesla has cut prices in China along with other Chinese EV makers and aims to launch a new Model Y SUV variant in 2026, which it hopes could help boost sales there. Yet Musk has appeared uninterested in making too many concessions to the market, instead relying on Tesla's reputation for quality and technology to remain a leading player in China. Tesla didn't respond to requests for comment. The company said in April in its earnings presentation about China that, while conventional wisdom is that competition will be bad for Tesla, the company believes it would accelerate EV adoption and help Tesla's sales in the long term. Many experts believe the road ahead for Tesla in China will remain bumpy. American companies have a long history of thriving temporarily in China before falling behind once local competitors scale up and government officials tilt the playing field in favor of domestic champions. Turfed out. In the early 2000s, Motorola was turfed out by Chinese companies supported by government policies that pressured the American company to share technology and adopt battery standards developed by Huawei Technologies. Apple was China's number one smartphone maker in 2023, but now ranks third behind Huawei and another Chinese brand, which have popular features at lower prices. Apple's slide has been compounded by Chinese restrictions on the use of its devices by government officials. "You never want to bet against Elon Musk and the resilience of Tesla," said Michael Dunn, former General Motors executive who now runs an automotive consulting firm. "Still," he says, "Musk likely knows there's a shelf life to many global companies operating in China and is looking at investments in places such as India in case China becomes more difficult. Musk is probably closer to sunset than sun up in his business in China," Dunn said. Tesla's most immediate challenge in China is its shrinking market share, even as the country's EV market has mushroomed. In May, Tesla sold slightly fewer than 40,000 cars in China, down 30% from the same month a year earlier. While the overall market for new energy vehicles, a category that includes full EVs and plug-in hybrids, rose 28%. Tesla's market share in the category was down to 4% in May from 11% in early 2021, according to China Passenger Car Association data. BYD, a key competitor, holds around 29% of the EV and plug-in market. Smartphone maker Xiaomi, which only started selling EVs a year ago, has about 3%. Car buyers interviewed by the Journal said Teslas don't seem as leading edge as before, while government restrictions on Tesla further curbed their popularity. Guanyang, 34, says he used to have a Tesla Model 3, which he enjoyed driving on weekends until his employer, a state-owned company, last year told him not to park the car in a company compound due to security concerns. China started limiting use of Tesla cars by government and military staff in 2021, citing concerns that data the cars gather could lead to national security leaks, though some areas have eased the restrictions after Tesla built a local data center to address the concerns. Qian sold his Tesla and paid $34,000 for an SU7 electric sedan from Xiaomi. Now he's a fan of his Xiaomi car, which includes Xiao AI, a voice assistant that can perform tasks such as opening vehicle doors and connect with other Xiaomi devices. "You know that feeling when you're leaving work and you can just tell Xiao AI in the car to remotely turn on the air conditioning in your room? That's pure bliss," said Qian. "Teslas are almost like iPhones now. They're getting uninspired and stale and don't have revolutionary features anymore." Tesla salespeople in China say extra features diminish battery range and impede acceleration and are encouraging buyers to focus on Tesla's safety record. But they also complain privately about the difficulty of meeting rising internal pressure to hit sales targets. After initially pledging to design a new car a few years ago that local consumers would recognize as more distinctly Chinese, Tesla shelved that plan, people familiar with the matter said, as other priorities took precedence. Instead, Musk pivoted to a strategy of designing a more affordable model which would remove or downgrade features from existing models to save costs and make these cars easier to mass produce on existing manufacturing lines. Some employees and analysts are skeptical about this strategy, which includes a new Model Y variant Tesla plans. They fear that stripped-down models will easily be outmatched by local rivals if they aren't priced significantly lower. Tesla's Model Y SUV, its best-selling model in China, starts at about $36,700. Meanwhile, the Sea Lion 07, a rival BYD electric SUV, starts at around $26,400. Self-driving stalls. Tesla's inability to fully roll out its driver assistance service is adding to its problems. Unlike older software that pre-programs rules about most situations a car might encounter, Tesla's current FSD is built on an AI-driven system that learns how to drive from millions of video clips taken from actual road experience. The system, mainly trained with U.S. data, is considered a technology leader and has been widely available in the U.S. since early 2024. FSD can help drivers park the car and navigate urban streets as well as highways. Currently, drivers must still pay attention while sitting behind the wheel and be prepared to take over. Musk has wanted to launch FSD in China not just to lift sales there, but also because China's EV market generates copious data that can improve FSD's capability, thereby cementing Tesla's global leadership. In April of 2024, Musk flew to Beijing and met personally with Premier Li, winning a tentative nod to move ahead with FSD in China. But he underestimated the roadblocks posed by Chinese regulations, which require car companies to train their systems with local driving data to prove their vehicles can safely handle domestic traffic conditions. Under Chinese law, companies are restricted from sending such data overseas for security reasons, a problem for Tesla since its FSD training has been in the U.S. Tesla initially offered to redact video from Chinese roads to hide sensitive information, but the sheer volume of data Tesla sought to transfer far surpassed officials' comfort levels, people familiar with the matter said. As a plan B, Tesla considered expanding its FSD training inside China. To do so, however, its China operations need to access the most advanced semiconductors, which have been blocked by U.S. export controls. After nearly 9 months of back and forth, the talks hit a dead end. While Tesla spins its wheels, local competitors have introduced sophisticated driving assistance technology, often at lower prices. Users report that XPeng's flagship package, XNGP, has similar functionality to Tesla's. BYD has a system named Eyes of God after a deity in Chinese mythology with three eyes, which the company says can cruise on city roads with minimal human intervention. Chinese companies are also moving ahead with robo-taxi services that use self-driving technologies, including thousands of robo-taxis operated by Baidu and Pony AI. Tesla, which launched its robo-taxi in Austin in June, has no robo-taxis on Chinese roads. Catfish effect. Tesla's struggles in China today contrast with the pre-pandemic years when the Chinese leaders appeared willing to do anything to court Musk. Their hope was that Tesla's expansion in China would propel underachieving local automakers and help build out the country's EV market. Chinese officials likened it to lobbing a predatory catfish into a pond full of sluggish fish. China provided Musk and Tesla with cheap land, low-interest loans, and tax incentives. In 2018, Tesla announced plans to build its first overseas car factory in Shanghai, becoming the first foreign automaker Beijing allowed to produce cars in China without a local partner. Tesla's presence also paid off for Beijing, igniting consumer interest in domestically made EVs and accelerating development of Chinese EV supply chain. Although Musk came to China to leverage its low costs and enormous market, he wasn't prepared for China's response, said Bill Russo, chief executive of Automobility, a Shanghai-based strategy firm. What he didn't bargain for is that Chinese companies would do that too, and they'd probably do it even better, he said. He made the same mistake that every foreign automaker made, to underestimate China's ability to out-innovate you. And that's Elon Musk is running out of road in China. Turning to the opinion page, we have this item, the Epstein conspiracy boomerang. These are boom times for conspiracy theorists, and one problem is they're never satisfied. There's always another cover-up to unravel or another hidden file somewhere that the evil establishment is hiding. That's what Trump Justice Department officials are learning to their dismay now that they're trying to close the books on the prosecution and death of Jeffrey Epstein. Government investigators ruled 6 years ago that the sex offender killed himself in prison, but many on the political right don't want to believe it. The skeptics included Kash Patel and Dan Bongino before President Trump chose them to run the Federal Bureau of Investigation. But after what DOJ calls an exhaustive review, they turned up no evidence of murder or a cover-up to protect Epstein's clients. There are also no credible evidence found that Epstein blackmailed prominent individuals as part of his actions, the Justice Department and FBI wrote in a memo released Monday. We did not uncover evidence that could predicate an investigation against uncharged third parties. Fair enough, except this isn't good enough for the social media fever swamps. Laura Loomer, Alex Jones, and other conspiracy theorists think Messrs. Patel and Bongino, as well as Attorney General Pam Bondi, must be lying, or have been co-opted, or who knows what. Ms. Bondi needs to resign, said Ms. Loomer, who is a pal of President Trump. There's a lesson here for partisans who think they can ride conspiracies to power. They can easily boomerang on you once you're in a position to see the real evidence and then have to convince a public that doesn't trust anyone in power. Welcome to the rotten establishment, Mr. Patel and Mr. Bongino. And that's the Epstein conspiracy boomerang, an item from the opinion page of the Wall Street Journal. You're listening to the Wall Street Journal here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. If you'd like to listen to the Wall Street Journal at a time of your choosing, you can go to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or download the Sun Sounds of Arizona app available for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or your Android phone or tablet from the Google Play Store. And of course, you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo. Well, let's turn now to the business and finance section of the Wall Street Journal for these headlines. Saudis invest in skyscraper project. Zuckerberg reels in a top AI researcher from Apple. And floor traders get day in court against CME. That first headline, Saudis invest in skyscraper project. The kingdom is joining with related companies on the New York City development. This is by Peter Grant and Elliot Brown. Saudi Arabia's government fund is taking a two-thirds stake in a site for a planned Manhattan skyscraper, the latest sign that foreign investors are flocking back to New York's rapidly recovering real estate market. The kingdom's public investment fund is teaming with related companies, which has said it's planning to build a 1,200-foot tower on the site. The New York developer and the Saudis own this site one block from Central Park, which was purchased last year for more than $600 million. Related initially planned a mixed-use project there with residential, retail, and a hotel, but more recently the firm said it's been considering an office building instead to take advantage of the strong demand among businesses for top-quality space in the city. The overall cost for the site and development is expected to be more than $1 billion, according to people familiar with the matter. The Saudi fund's final contribution is still being determined, but PIF has already invested about $200 million, these people said. Foreign investors have been returning this year to New York City's commercial property market, which is the largest, most liquid, and among the top performers in the U.S. U.S. property developments and investments slowed considerably early on during the pandemic. They were hit again after interest rates soared in 2022, pushing down values. Foreign investor interest evaporated. But lately, investment in New York has been recovering as more workers return to the office, providing a new lift for neighboring businesses. Manhattan's office leasing during the first half of the year surpassed the same period in some years before COVID-19's outbreak, according to data firm CoStar Group. New York City apartment rents are at all-time highs, boosting the mayoral candidacy of Democrat socialist Zohran Mamdani, who recently won the Democrat primary while pledging a rent freeze. The city's visitor numbers are just below record highs. East Dill Secured has seen the increase in foreign activity firsthand. The real estate brokerage and investment bank has $12 billion in New York real estate deals completed or underway in 2025, according to Chief Executive Roy March. Virtually every one of them has some level of foreign capital involved, he said. Foreign investors purchased more than $2.1 billion of Manhattan commercial property in the first quarter of 2025 and the last quarter of 2024 combined, according to data firm MSCI. That total was five times the purchases in the same six-month period 2 years earlier. The Saudi Public Investment Fund has assets of about $1 trillion, making it one of the world's largest investors. It is one of the major overseas funds returning to New York. The fund has a close relationship with Related, best known for its sprawling Hudson Yards development on Manhattan's west side. In 2020, the Saudi fund made a debt investment in Related that is convertible into a 15% equity stake. Since then, the two have consulted closely on numerous related real estate projects, including the proposed skyscraper at 625 Madison in Manhattan. Saudi Arabia's public investment fund has historically been a relatively small player in real estate outside the country, instead directing its property-focused dollars toward domestic mega-projects meant to transform the nation. But in the past few years, it has planted its flag on a number of high-profile global properties and brands. Last year, it took a 40% stake in Selfridges, a high-end UK department store group that boasts a grand flagship by London's Hyde Park. In 2022, it joined with other funds to put $900 million into the ultra-luxury hotelier Aman. And in 2023, it bought a 49% stake in the upmarket hotel chain Rocoforte. And that's Saudi's Invest in Skyscraper Project. Our next article is by Rolf Winkler. Zuckerberg reels in a top AI researcher from Apple. Mark Zuckerberg added another big name to Meta Platform's new superintelligence AI division, hiring a top Apple AI researcher as part of a weeks-long recruitment push, according to a person familiar with the hire. Ruoming Pang is the first big name from Apple to jump over to Meta's superintelligence lab, a blow to the iPhone maker, which is working to improve its own artificial intelligence products. Pang, who led Apple's foundation model team, is set to receive a pay package from Meta in the tens of millions of dollars, said the person. Bloomberg earlier reported the hire from Apple. Zuckerberg has fueled an arms race for AI talent, making a string of expensive hires to staff the new Meta unit as it seeks to regain momentum in AI. Last week, Zuckerberg announced 11 hires for the new lab, including researchers from OpenAI, Google DeepMind, and Anthropic. Meta is offering huge pay packages, $100 million for some, to attract talent to the unit, which is led by former Scale chief executive Alexander Wang, after Meta made an investment in his company valuing it at $29 billion. The Facebook and Instagram parent released the latest versions of its Llama model in April to little fanfare and later delayed the launch of another bigger version of the model, prompting internal concerns about the direction of its AI efforts. The win for Meta is another loss for Apple, which has failed to deliver the promised AI upgrades for its products and services. One was an AI-driven version of its personal assistant, Siri, promised in mid-2024, which is yet to be released because the company's internal version doesn't meet the company's quality standard for customers, executives have said. And that's Zuckerberg reels in a top AI researcher from Apple. We turn now to our next headline, floor traders get day in court against CME. This is by Alexander Osipovich. Thousands of jostling traders once packed the floors of Chicago's futures exchanges before the advent of high-speed computerized trading turned them into relics of a bygone era. Now, some of them will finally have their day in court. On Monday, a trial began in a long-running class action lawsuit filed by traders who say that exchange giant CME Group duped them out of the privileges they held as members of the city's once elite community of floor traders. The plaintiffs, who estimate that they are owed about $2 billion in damages plus interest, say the company broke its promises to them when it opened a data center for electronic trading that effectively doomed the old trading floors. CME has called the lawsuit baseless. A spokeswoman for CME declined to comment. The company repeatedly tried to get the suit thrown out but failed each time. The lawsuit, filed in 2014, has dragged on so long that one of the original plaintiffs has died. Hundreds of former floor traders could be affected by the outcome. The trial, being held at a county courthouse in downtown Chicago, kicked off Monday with jury selection. It's expected to last several weeks. At the core of the dispute is a series of deals that created CME Group, a financial behemoth that runs markets ranging from interest rate options to futures on wheat, gold, and oil. CME boasts a $102 billion market cap and some of the fattest profit margins of any company in the S&P 500. But until the turn of the 21st century, it was a nonprofit, known then as the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. It was a cooperative owned by its members, the traders who held seats, allowing them to wheel and deal in its bustling, open outcry trading pits. Before electronic trading, only traders who owned or leased seats could access the floor. Such traders could profit from being at the heart of the market's action, making memberships a precious commodity. In the 1990s, soybean trader Gerald Petro spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to become a member of the Chicago Board of Trade, an exchange that later merged with CME. Me being able to come down to the Board of Trade and get a membership, a full membership, was generational, a generational event. It was supposed to change my children, my grandchildren, Petro, one of the lawsuit's plaintiffs, said in a 2020 deposition. He added that he was among the first people in his family to graduate from college. CME transformed itself into a for-profit company in 2000. To win members' support for the transaction, the exchange gave them two kinds of shares. A shares became CME's publicly traded stock. B shares were equivalent to the old memberships, allowing holders to benefit from trading floor rights and privileges, the exchange said in a 2000 prospectus. 7 years later, when CME merged with the Chicago Board of Trade, creating what was then the world's largest derivatives exchange, CBOT members such as Petro were granted a similar deal. But the price of the old-style memberships has stagnated since then. From January 2008 to last month, the price of CME's most valuable class of B shares slid from $1.6 million apiece to $875,000, according to data on the exchange operator's website. Over the same period, CME's A shares more than doubled in value. The key factor behind the divergence, according to the plaintiffs, was the 2010 launch of CME's data center in the Chicago suburb of Aurora, Illinois. High-frequency trading firms pay for the right to place their servers next to CME's computer systems in Aurora, allowing them to execute trades in millionths of a second and obtain data from the exchange as quickly as possible. In effect, Aurora became CME's new trading floor, but the members didn't get the trading floor rights that they'd been promised, the plaintiffs argue. This was a betrayal of the basic bargain they wrote in an April court filing. CME denies breaking any promises. It says B-share owners were only guaranteed the right to access open outcry trading floors, not any sort of electronic floor. CME also has said that the A-shares it gave to many floor traders in the 2000s are now valued at millions of dollars. In recent months, prices for the beaten-down B-shares have climbed as some traders have speculated that CME could be forced to buy them out to resolve the lawsuit. CME Chairman and Chief Executive Terrence Duffy has denied any such plans and voiced confidence that the company will prevail. "We feel very strong about our position," Duffy said at CME's annual meeting in May. Last month, he received a subpoena compelling him to testify at the trial. And that's floor traders get a day in court against CME. Our next article, EV makers rev up incentives to shift sales out of reverse. This is by Ryan Felton, Sharon Turlip, and Imani Moisi. Not even bargain basement deals are enough to entice U.S. drivers to go all in on electric vehicles. A Hyundai dealership in New Jersey is hyping a $169 a month lease on its IONIQ 6 sedan, which carries a sticker price of about $38,000, making it far less expensive than a comparably priced lease on its gasoline-burning models. Kia will lease its Niro EV SUV for as little as $129 a month. And a GMC dealership in Indiana touts the Hummer EV with a $100,000 sticker price for a monthly lease payment of $650, similar to the monthly payment for a gas-powered car that costs half as much to buy. The dealership in Kokomo, Indiana, sells about one Hummer EV a month, sales manager Travis Shedrun said. Curious shoppers will check it out, then opt for a gas-powered Cadillac Escalade or GMC Denali instead. They're doing well, but they're not selling as well as gas-powered alternatives, he said of the Hummers. Even as automakers pile on the financial incentives to entice buyers, EV sales are falling. In June, they were lowered by 6.2%, the third straight monthly decline for battery-powered cars, according to estimates from Motor Intelligence, an industry research firm. Tesla, which accounts for roughly half the EV market in the U.S., said last week that its global sales dropped 13.5% during the second quarter. The plunge comes despite EV makers spending record amounts on customer discounts and incentives. Meanwhile, Republican lawmakers are phasing out the $7,500 EV tax credit that's been in place for years to help boost sales. Why are so many American drivers hesitant? It's driving range, it's cost, and it's charging infrastructure, said Mark Barrett, automotive lead at consulting firm Plant Moran. They've always been the big three reasons. Despite EV skepticism, EV models have proliferated. There are 75 models on sale in the U.S. this year, up from fewer than 20 on offer in 2020. There are twice as many incentives offered to buy EVs as exist for gas-powered cars, said Stephanie Valdez-Streety, an analyst for Cox Automotive. Promotions covered more than 14% of the average transaction price in May, according to Cox's data. Tesla's price drops have driven the market, she added. During the most recent quarter, Tesla offered 0% financing for its Model 3 sedan, which starts at roughly $42,000, and the Cybertruck, which starts at $69,990. Last week, the Tesla showroom in Manhattan's Meatpacking District was busier than traditional car dealerships lining 11th Avenue and Hell's Kitchen, but tourists accounted for most of the foot traffic. Out-of-towners seemed the most interested in snapping photos of Tesla's Optimus humanoid robot than taking a test drive. Vincent Darboux of Quebec stopped to compare the latest Tesla models with the Swedish Polestar EV he owns. He says he has no plans to trade in his vehicle now, but could be convinced by the right financial incentives. "I know the tax credits in the U.S. are kind of done," he said. The EV tax credits, targeted by Republicans, have been a key driver of electric car sales, particularly among less affluent buyers. For new cars, the credit amounts to as much as $7,500 off the price, while used car costs can be cut by up to $4,000. President Trump's Big Beautiful Bill puts an end to those credits as of September the 30th. Some drivers may be motivated to buy or lease an EV before fall, but analysts aren't expecting a groundswell of interests. That's because making the leap to an EV can be daunting because of the cost of home chargers and the lack of a robust charging infrastructure in many U.S. cities and along major highways. Many car makers, including Ford Motor, BMW, and Hyundai, are trying to allay these worries with deals for free home charger installation or offers to cover the cost of charging at a public station. Leasing has remained the primary way for dealers to move EVs off their lots. Wealthy customers and pricier EVs haven't been eligible for the EV credit that is expiring, but those restrictions haven't applied to leased vehicles. In the fall, both sales and leases will have to succeed or fail in an unsubsidized EV market. "That gives us basically 60 days to figure out what our plan is," said David Crist, general manager of Toyota in North America. "The ground under the transactional experience for the EV is about to change, and we'll have to reset." That's EV makers rev up incentives to shift sales out of reverse. Next, from Business and Finance, we have this item. Oracle cuts its prices for federal government. This is by Bell Lynn. Oracle is cutting the cost of its database software and cloud computing service for the federal government, making it the latest tech giant to offer the Trump administration a significant discount on its services. The company is offering government agencies a 75% discount on its license-based software, including databases and analytics, as well as a substantial discount on its cloud service through the end of November, the General Services Administration said. Oracle declined to specify how much of a discount it is giving the government on its cloud service. In software, customers can pay upfront for a license that covers an extended period or purchase a subscription with recurring payments. The GSA said the agreement with Oracle, the latest in a series of deals it signed with large tech companies, is the first of its kind that provides the entire government with a discount on cloud infrastructure. The agency, which oversees procurement for the federal government, says it is in negotiations with other cloud providers to potentially make similar deals. Cloud infrastructure is the technology used for fundamentals such as data storage, compute, and networking, and is considered the backbone of modern IT systems. In May, the GSA said Salesforce cut the price that it charges the government for use of its messaging app Slack by 90% through the end of November. An earlier deal with Google focused on discounting the tech giant's software, not its cloud infrastructure. Adobe and the search company Elastic have struck similar agreements to offer their software at lower cost. "Through procurement consolidation, we're aiming to bring the leverage of the whole, commanding the purchasing power of the federal wallet, to these technology providers to get the best discounts for the taxpayers," Federal Acquisition Service Commissioner Josh Gruenbaum said in an interview. The GSA said it intends to achieve those savings by negotiating with tech companies directly rather than going through third parties. Longer-term discounts with tech providers are expected soon, it added. The effort is part of the Trump administration's continued focus on extracting savings from federal contractors, from consulting firms to tech companies. President Trump has issued executive orders aimed at consolidating and streamlining federal procurement. Though Elon Musk has stepped away from the Department of Government Efficiency, administration officials have said that broader effort to reduce waste continues. Like prior administrations, Trump's has said it's focused on modernizing the federal government through technology. Achieving that goal hasn't been easy. The government still runs on many legacy information technology systems like mainframe computers. The deal with Oracle includes providing the federal government with access to its AI services and special assistance moving IT systems onto the cloud. The Trump administration is focused on ensuring that we're delivering the most cutting-edge technology to optimize and pull forward federal government systems into the modern era, Grunbaum said, breaking down silos and enhancing interoperability to provide maximum transparency is where a lot of waste, fraud, and cost takeout is going to come from. Oracle is part of a wave of Silicon Valley companies working to get closer to the Trump administration in defense and other areas. Best known for its database software, Oracle has recently increased the scope of its work with the government. That includes the launch of a program last month that aims to help smaller vendors sell tech to the Defense Department. In 2022, Oracle was part of a group of cloud providers, including Amazon.com, Google, and Microsoft, that were awarded a major cloud services contract that offers commercial pricing or better to the Defense Department. And that's Oracle cuts its prices for federal government. Turn now to the Heard on the Street section. Financial analysis and commentary for this headline: Clean Energy Industry Braces for End to U.S. Subsidies. This is by David Uberti. Southern Energy Management is bracing for whiplash. The Raleigh-based home solar panel installation company grew steadily in recent years thanks in part to tax credits and former President Joe Biden's landmark 2022 climate law. Now, Chief Executive Will Etheridge says his 190-person company's residential solar sales could plunge in 2026 by as much as half. President Trump's mega bill, which he signed into law Friday, ends the subsidies later this year. Etheridge's plans to buy more supplies from factories in North Carolina and elsewhere are on hold. "Now I'm not thinking about that at all," he said. "I'm trying to think about how to save North Carolina jobs." A wave of government spending that swept through the U.S. economy in recent years is about to recede. Biden's climate law threw subsidies behind wind and solar power, electric vehicles, and other green projects that federal forecasters said would total nearly $400 billion. Outside analysts projected the ultimate spending would be even greater. Investors jumped into renewables stocks, while local governments and labor unions clamored for new projects. Trump's big, beautiful bill will turn off that spigot. Credits for EVs and home solar panels are slated to end in the coming months. Incentives to develop or produce renewable energy will wind down within years. The legislation, meanwhile, boosts the prospects for fossil fuel production on public lands, a boon to oil and gas drillers that are pumping record supplies. Biden's law tried to build a bridge to an economy more oriented around renewable energy, said Tracy Stone Manning, president of the Wilderness Society, a group that aims to protect public lands. "What Trump is doing is blowing the bridge up," said Stone Manning, who was director of the Bureau of Land Management in the Biden administration. The clashing visions have left many developers and workers around the country in a lurch. Clean energy executives expected regulatory changes under any new administration. Some warn, though, that the swift rollback of much of a previously passed law will create a new level of uncertainty for future investment and raise financing costs down the road. "You're going to strand a lot of capital and you're going to put a lot of people out of business by changing the chessboard right in the middle of the game," said Reagan Farr, chief executive of solar developer Silicon Ranch. Trump's spending bill, which the Congressional Budget Office expects will cut more than $500 billion in tax incentives over the next decade, isn't as extreme as some renewables advocates feared. A proposed tax on wind and solar projects was stripped by the Senate. Lawmakers also extended through 2027 a phase-out of credits for renewable energy investment and production. That could give some ongoing construction runway to continue, but deals still in negotiation or in the early stages of development could be caught in no man's land, said Farr, whose company's projects include several solar arrays in Georgia and Tennessee to power Meta Platforms data centers. They're not things that you just throw up in 6 months and you're done, he said. The policy changes could reduce investment by about $500 billion across electricity and clean fuels production by 2035, according to preliminary estimates by the Princeton University-led REPEAT project. Renewables proponents fear the upshot will be higher bills for Americans. Although Trump's campaign pledged to lower Americans' energy costs, some oil and gas executives have said privately that they understood his drill, baby, drill rallying cry as an economic organizing principle rather than a push to bore more wells through shale rock. Analysts say the new legislation will have limited immediate impact on the already record-breaking U.S. fossil fuel production. Oil drillers last week operated 12% fewer rigs than they did at the start of the year, according to Baker Hughes, pointing to languishing commodity prices and new tariffs on imported steel. Nearly half of the oil and gas executives polled by the Dallas Fed in June said they expect to drill fewer wells in 2025 than initially expected. Longer term, however, measures such as expanded federal leases, cheaper royalties, and the end of Biden-era tax credits will help shield fossil fuels from more competition. That could be particularly beneficial to producers of natural gas who are jockeying with renewables developers to fuel the power-hungry AI boom. If repealing these subsidies will kill their industry, then maybe it shouldn't exist in the first place, Tom Pyle, president of the pro-oil and gas group American Energy Alliance, said. Already, renewable stocks have been thrashed in recent years by inflationary shock and stubbornly high interest rates. Arduous permitting processes and supply chain snafus busted project timelines. Costs spiraled, local officials feared a pullback in tax credits, and in turn, a disappearing customer base for new manufacturers for the better part of a year. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for clean energy industry. Braces for end to U.S. subsidies. You've been listening to The Wall Street Journal here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org, on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app available for the Apple iPad or iPhone from the Apple App Store, or Android phone or tablet from Google Play, and also streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo.